Malachim Aleph Perek Tes Vav. Pasuk Ches. Actually, good Pasuk Ches last time, but let's sort of start from a good starting point. Mishnas Esrim Veshesh Shana LeAsa Melech Yehuda. In the 26th year of Asa Melech Yehuda. Tezayin plus a Tez. That look better. Okay, Rav George, with us, yeah. Bishnas Esrim v'Sheis Shana LeAsa Melech Yehuda, the 26th year of Asa Melech Yehuda, Malach Ela Ben Baasha Al Yisrael Betilta Shnasai. Ela, the son of Baasha, ruled over Yisrael in Tirtza for 2 years. And we already know that there is an elimination sentence hanging over Baasha's house from Yehu Anabi. Vayikshol of Avdoi Zimri, so his servant Zimri conspired against him. Sar Machatzi Sarechev, he was the general of half of the chariot company, of the army, two divisions. Vehu b'Tirtza, and at the time, Ela was in Tirtza, Shoyse Shikor. He had drank himself drunk. Beis Arzo Asher Al Habayis b'Tirtza. In the house of Arzo, this was the man who ran the king's estate in Tirtza. Oh, no, by the way, that the Rambam says that a king is not allowed to get drunk. So this is just another manifestation of the quality of Malchus Yisrael. Okay?
What's the market for the Rambam?
What's that?
What's the market for the Rambam?
I don't know. Maybe because he's a Shefet. Vayavoy Zimri, Vayakeu, Vayamiseu. Zimri came and smote him and killed him. Mishnas Esrim v'Sheva LeAsa Melech Yehuda, in the 27th year of Asa Melech Yehuda, Vayim Leis Tachtav, and he took the throne in his stead. What's that?
The Gemara brings down that Bathsheba used to give Malchus to
be Shlomo.
Shlomo. The fire for drinking.
Was he already the king then?
No, he's the king. She said the whole time of us people will say that if you're a Russian or a Bengaloni, you're only a father from the top of the tent.
Well,
he took he became king as a kid also. He was 12 when he became king. I don't know. Okay. Now, Vayehi b'molchay, as he took the throne, the Shifta al-Kisa, as he sat on the throne, Hika es kol beis Baasha, he smote the whole house of Baasha, Vayehi sheloi mashtim bekir, he did not leave any, well, you can either say male or a dog, depending on how you mafarish it, v'ga'alavre'ehu, not only that, he also wiped out all of his relatives, all of his friends, this is the good, Goyish style purge, right? The complete purge. Stalin style. Now, Vayashmei Zimri, as Kol Beis Baasha Kidvar Hashem, Zimri wiped out the whole house of Baasha as Hashem had spoken, Asher Dibel Baasha B'Yadei Hanavi, as he had spoken, had conveyed to Yehu Hanavi. El Kol Chatois Baasha, Lechatois El Ebnoi, this was retribution for all the sins of Baasha, Shalom Lebabron. All the sins of Baasha, all the sins of his son Ela, Asher Chatu, Asher Ispiu Es Yisrael, everything that they had sinned, and they had caused the Jewish people to sin, Lahachis Es Hashem Aleikei Yisrael Be'ableim, the anger of Hashem with all of their nonsense. The Avodah Zarah, the Yeser Divrei Ela, all of Ela's other affairs, the Kol Asher Asa, everything that he did, Halein Tzuvim Al Sefer Divrei Hayom LeMalchei Yisrael. They are all inscribed on the Chronicles of Malchei Yisrael. Okay, So this Zimri conspired against him and took the throne. Now, Mishnas Esrim v'sheva shonel the Atsa Melech Yehuda, the 27th year of Atsa Melech Yehuda, just the Mepharshim make a point of noting, the Rabbanel notes this in a general way all throughout the whole period of the Melachim, that there were a lot less Melachim in Yehuda than in Yisrael. But here, specifically in Asa's reign, you see that throughout Asa's reign, every couple of years, Malchus Yisrael is switching another king. Asa goes through about four or five kings of Malchus Yisrael during his reign. Because, as Hashem's saying, that if they'll rise to the call of what it means to be a Jewish king, they'll have long reigns. If not, it'll be quick, one after the other. So now, in the 27th year of Asa Melech Yehuda, Malach Zimri Shivas Yomim B'Tirza. He had a most short-lived reign. He was a king for 7 days in Tirza. Va'amchonim al Gibzoin Asher LaPlishtim. This all took place at a time when the Jewish people were besieging Gibzoin against the Plishtim. Meaning, we pointed out, I think, last week that Elah, the son of Basha, had been in the process of trying to expand his kingdom by moving out into Plishti territories. He felt very confident. He was busy getting drunk. So Moshe David Valley says this was what we call Ifnei Shever Goyin. He was completely unconcerned with the prophecy leveled against him. It didn't inspire him to tshuva at all. He felt secure. He was busy trying to expand. As he celebrated drunk in his manager's house, he's killed. Now, so most the army was out of town at that time. Zimri actually took advantage of that to do what he did, right? He killed Elah when the army is out of town. So the people outside in the camp heard the news that Kosha Zimri conspired, and he killed the king. So they didn't like that. So they instead crowned Omri, who was the general, out in the camp. So Zimri took the throne with his kevra in the capital, but the army put Omri on the throne. So let's note the poor guy Zimri. He had this conspiracy and he won and he took the throne. The truth is, he was just a puppet. Hashem needed somebody. Hashem didn't want to be the king, but there was nobody else who was interested in wiping out the house of Basha, right? Omri, who was really going to be the next king, was loyal to Basha, was loyal to Elam, sorry, he wasn't going to do that. So Hashem had to find the right guy, put it into his mind. He thought, wow, I pulled off a fast one, now I have the throne. He went about energetically wiping out the house of Basha. Well, that was really all Hashem had in mind. I need somebody to do this job for me. Do the cleanup job and then we'll move on. Then we'll wipe you off the table, sweep you off the table also, and put the next one on the throne.
Theoretically, Omri would have put in another son of Basha?
What's that?
Theoretically, Omri might have put in another son of Basha?
We might presume so. I didn't see that stated, but we see here that the people were not happy about this assassination, right? What's that? Right, but once again, not for that purpose. Not for that purpose. He was doing it for his own purposes. So Hashem takes the wrong person and has him do the right job. So this is just something to note, because that as far as Zimri was concerned, this was the highlight of his life. He takes the throne, he doesn't realize he has exactly a week of life left, right? But he's taking the throne. That's it, he achieved his life dream. He'd been dreaming about this and he'd been planning this, etc. And now he's finally going to become the king, and he has all his grand plans, right? All the reforms he's going to make, and he's going to have a dynasty now. No reason why his 10 generations left him shouldn't reign. Aye. By Yerovam it only went 2 generations. By him it only went, by Basha it only went 2 generations. But, of course, when you make your own revolution, you envision that it's going to be forever. How pathetic is the man who is... This is really relevant to all strokes of good fortune. Here it's specifically so when we see a person who's conspiring and murdering in order to get his way. But don't you look around and see this all over the place? Right? When you have the plotter, even if it's not as dangerous, what they're talking about in places where it really works that way. Like, right? Saddam Hussein overthrew his predecessor, had him live out the rest of his life in disgrace in prison until he ended up swinging on the end of a rope. And so often, look around in world history, when people are, with all the backstabbing going on, it's just a matter of time before the stab in the back comes. Also, in politics nowadays, right, even in civilized countries, when it's not literal backstabbing, there's all the figurative backstabbing, and with all the plots and the conspiracies and the this and the that, call it plain politics, nobody lasts long, everybody ends up with their own busyness. And Bichlal, when a person suddenly finds himself, yes, he conspired, he planned, he swindled, he tricked, he backstabbed, and now he's at the top of the world. Don't celebrate your good fortune because you never know where Hashem is just setting you up for your very great fall. So, what's this relevant to us? None of us here are aspiring to take Netanyahu's seat, and anyways, it's not a question of a seat to take, so we can leave him there. It's the wrong man in the wrong place. But how is this relevant to us? It's relevant, the way this is relevant to us is that the truth is, any time you come upon a stroke of good luck, it's scary when you think of it this way, but this is one stark example of how when you come into a stroke of good luck, a new situation in life, etc., how you never really know what does this hold. How often does Hashem operate this way? Like you said before, it's Nei Shever going. Before Hashem really smashes a person to smithereens, he raises them up high, because then you throw them down hard. Right? So, easier to break, exactly. So, how do you ever know? So often Hashem does operate this way. By putting a person into a place where he feels like he's at the top of the world, and that's really just setting him up for his downfall. How do you ever know if to celebrate material success? Are you going to end up looking like a real loser when it's only going to take 2 days? If you know the future, Chas v'Shalom, where it turns out that this is really just setting you up for a major, major fall. Whether in this case, assassination, or all kinds of other things. The Gemilla said, Kennedy thought that the day he won the presidency was the greatest day in his life, right? That was just leading him straight to his death. So, how do you ever know if you can celebrate material success? All material success can really just be setting you up for something worse. So the Shlomo makes this point, and this really, you might say in a sense, is very much a motto of what Avigdor Miller hammered home all the time. And you know what? The Hashem Yishmuel says in the context of Rosh Hashanah. But the Yisoid is make sure to immediately convert any spiritual success into something, any material success into something spiritual. And then you know that it's a success. It's locked in. It's too late. Even if it's taken away from you tomorrow, you already locked it in as an eternal success, as a permanent success. So that's why.
Stop the downfall.
What's that?
Not going to stop the downfall, but you won't be a loser.
So let's take it first at that level. Meaning, yes, let's say a guy won the lottery. All too often, Rachmana Litzlan, you hear these stories about when the people lose the lottery and then you don't want to read the next two chapters, right? How they just don't know how to deal with it. What's that?
When they win the lottery.
When they win the lottery. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How what it just leads them into and whirlpools and. Okay? And culminating either in complete fall or suicide or whatever it is. So, a person wins the lottery. So number one, you want to lock it in as a success, turn it into something spiritual. Obviously, the most direct thing is to thank Hashem to celebrate, and thank Hashem in a very serious way. Heartfelt thanks. The Gemara says, immediately translated into some sort of mitzvah. Right? That's why we have the concept, let's say we're talking about a stroke of good fortune and money. Won the lottery, okay? You won $10 million. You decide you're going to give that, we're all naturally going to give the maaser to tzedakah. Right? Those $1 million that you gave to tzedakah from those $10 million, if you gave a chaimish, it's $2 million, right? Can never be taken away from you. Now, you know that you've won. No matter what, that's eternal. So the Gemara says, a person finds a metziah of, I guess that was the Gemara's time concept of winning the lottery. You find a big amount of money in the street. I think the Gemara says, buy a sefer Torah with it. Something along those lines. Buy a sefer Torah with it. I do something that's going to lock in there. I used it as a mitzvah, now it's locked in forever. To immediately translate material success into luchnius, at the very least, we should say at the very most, because even when you do these other things, you give the maaser, etc., these should all be expressing the gratitude toward Hashem, and that locks it in. And that way you know, you're guaranteed now, no matter what happens afterwards, even if it ends up losing it, you lose it, it just ends up complicating you, etc., it was a success. But the truth is, it even goes a step further than that. And the Shem Yishmael talks about this in a very profound way. He says, why is it that so often it works this way? L'fnei Shever Goyim, the concept of L'fnei Shever Goyim. A person rises up high and then he smashes the smithereens. What's the charm in that pattern? He says, you see it very often with nations in the world when they really reach their height. After that, they fall all the way and they basically move off the map. That can be existing for a long time. And then when they really make it to the top, and then they fall off the map. So, what's the pshat in that? So he says the pshat in that is that when a person or a nation, whatever it is brought to a very high place and really starts to feel high, independent, like self-capable, so he is distancing himself that much more from Hashem. The more of what we'll call a person feels himself to be his own yeshus, his own entity, independent, I'm in my own hands, the more a person feels that way, the more he's detaching himself from Hashem. I don't know if this is like, perhaps this is going to talk a person never really dependent on Hashem, never really believed in Hashem in the first place. Because the mindset now, you believe that much more in yourself. Before, at least, you felt a certain trepidation of the unknown, right? Now, the unknown has no control over me because now I move myself on my own idol. That distance is what causes the downfall. He says, whereas with the Jews, it's like Hashem says, he brings a whole Medrash Mamash to this effect. The more, Hashem says, the more I raise you up, on the contrary, the more you lower yourself before me, and thereby you secure your high place that much more. Because with the person who responds right, the effect is exactly the opposite. You're raised up. You sense that this is coming from Hashem. You feel Hashem in your life that much more. You've just secured your position that much more. So, if you became president, okay, none of us are becoming president tomorrow. But if you became president, oh, that's right, you actually have. And now you feel, oh, I was moved to the top. Yeah. And, well, again, in a case here, in a case like this, it's an Eved Lo'ev De Hashem, right? When he's looking about a president in the right way, it's an Eved Lo'ev De Hashem, so you don't even feel that way. So, by the way, that's what Rav Hirsch says, it's a difference in usage between, when it talks about the kings of Yishmael, it calls them Nesim. Nesim. A Nasi is a cloud. Hovers overhead. And where does the cloud sustain from? Draws from those under him, right? It has to sustain from the big coming up. Because the other term for a ruler is an Adon. And Adon is the opposite, it's an Eden. It's the base, it's the one that's supporting everything on top of it. And this is the difference between a Jewish manig and a non-Jewish manig. A Jewish manig is willing to be placed underneath everybody and let them all ride on him. Right? The Yishmael manig is the one who says, okay, now I'm at the top. I expect to be sucking off everybody. keep you flying high.
A lot of times you find the Nasi is called the Nasi
That's right. Well, most of the terms are used interchangeably, but they've got special significance. That's right. By the Shvatim, etc. But the first usage of the Torah is what gives the... Sure, words are used interchangeably. No, the first usage of the Torah is by Shema. But the point being, back to our point, Hashem raised you up high. If you feel Hashem doing that, and therefore you sense Hashem that much more in your life, so on the contrary, the good fortune or the prestige that Hashem gave you caused you to connect yourself to Him that much more, to secure yourself to Him that much more, and on the contrary, that makes you that much more secure. So Zimri is mamish, this poor Zimri, this poor loser, mamish like a, the ultimate loser, a person who goes and uses rishis when he's really just being manipulated by Hashem as a puppet, because Hashem has His purpose to fill, and then after that, we'll have you dangling at the end of a rope. Hitler was saying,
you could stop the process by locking it in, or you're just going to stop it right when you lock it in.
So he was saying that the etzem, you can't actually, it really depends on what's really going on behind the process. We can't give ironclad quoting. But definitely, as one of the rules of the system is that yes, if you respond right to something, if it's not a bad thing, sometimes if it was originally, that's your top gift, to experience this and then lose it, it's not going to change it. But if the pshat is, sometimes it does depend on if it's the relationship between the person's ma'asim and Hashem's hashgacha, then yes, by responding right, you'll be locking it in. Chavis HaBavis is all about that. That's how you make yourself ra'ui for Hashem's continued kindnesses, by acknowledging that.
So usually the Bnei Sheva Gaon is it retroactive or retroactive analysis, or no? I guess if I remember setting up the system because you know the history already.
There will be both. There will be the person who said he's sentenced to death and is Hashem's way of doing it. And then there's the system of, okay, this person's turn to rise to power because he used that to distance himself from Hashem that much more, he automatically fell. It's the same outward manifestation, but it could be two different mechanics. Okay, so again, Zimri is a person that hanged up on our fridge because of the example of this. The person volunteering to be through his wishes, to be the loser, was just the puppet who feels like he's on high and is really just being used by Hashem and immediately is going to fall and bite the dust. So now, Bayale Amri called Yisrael Imay Megibsoin. So Amri and all of Yisrael with him came back from Gibsoin by Yatsuru al Tirtzon, and they laid siege to Tirtzon. Vayehi, Kiroz Zimri Kinilke Dahoir. When Zimri saw that the city was gonna fall, Bayavoy El Armoin Beis HaMelech, they came to hold himself up in the palace. Vayisroifalavis Beis Melech Ba'esh, so Amri set fire to the palace by Yamas, and he died. He was the rebel who killed the previous king and put himself on the throne, and now he's being immediately assassinated by his own successor.
He burnt himself up in the palace?
He wanted to fortify himself in the palace, and Amri came along with his army and burnt it down.
With him in it.
Yeah. So Moshe David Vali says that this was really meant to be a certain culmination. This palace that had served Yeravam's family and that had served Basha's family and that had been becoming more and more of a symbol of the Tumah of the 10 tribes, now that Zimri, with his own sins, went and brought it to its peak, Zimri along with the palace were burnt down. Al-Khatoysav Asher Chotol Lasa Sorah Ba'in Hashem. This was brought upon Zimri for his own sins that he did against Hashem. V'aleches v'derech Yerovam, book his blames for following the path of Yerovam. V'v'chatosa Hashem also lahachli es Yisrael, for the sins that he did to cause Klal Yisrael to sin.
In 7 days.
Exactly a week. It's like, the question say, whoa, a whole career within 7 days. What's that? There's all of a week, yeah. And first he was busy wiping out Basha's family. He was too busy killing you. He wasn't doing that favor. He was busy killing him. What's that?
Where does he have time for all this?
So the Mepharshim say two things. Either they say he was a commander for a long time before this. Commander is also a position of prestige. He had plenty of opportunity to sin and to cause others to sin as a commander. Malvin says the chat is Hashem knew what his plans was. He knew what his game plan was for his reign.
You never see that the machshava is like attached to a knife or like a rock. You know, if it's got potential, the ship doesn't come to
the end.
Right. Says that my desire is an exception to the rule. Says that my desire is an exception to the rule. So, presumably, it's about my desire here. That's what I'm right. Okay. It also says that once a person establishes a track record as a sinner, then already we are mitar of machshava lemaisa.
But mamzash is gemar deita.
What's that?
It's gemar deita. You know, the formulator, the final solution.
Okay. The yesa divrei zimri and the rest of Zimri's affairs, the kishra shel kashar, that was basically his history as a king. Conspiracy. He didn't make it into the Chronicles. Okay, it's also recorded. His week-long reign. It's a very short chapter, but it's also recorded in the Chronicles of Malchei Yisrael. Okay, but now a certain anarchy took effect. Yisrael, Lachatzi. At that time, the Jewish people were split in two. Half of the people supported Tivni ben Ginas. They wanted him to be the king. The others are behind Amri. So some of the Mepharshim say that Tivni ben Ginas was the next in Zimri's party. Meaning Zimri did have a party of supporters. Just Amri came immediately and overwhelmed them. Zimri had in mind, he had his plan of setting up the Matzah. He was overwhelmed because immediately the army came back from the front and fought him. But there was still this party existing. And Tivni was now their man, while the army itself was supporting Amri. That is usually work if one person has the army behind him, right? So Vayechazaka Am Ashachrei Amri Etaam Ashachrei Tivni Ben Ginas. The party behind Amri overcame the party that was behind Tivni ben Ginas. Vayamas Tivni, and Tivni died. Vayimlach Amri, and Amri took the throne. This wasn't coincidental. We understand he didn't die on his bed. The Mepharshim say that what happened was there was this struggle, and then Asa, the king of Yehuda, made a shidduch. He married his son off to Amri's daughter. Amri now is a mechutin of King Asa. Because by now he had been ruling for a long time, the very prestigious and successful King of Yehuda. This very much enhanced the prestige of Amri himself. And this is what tipped the scales in favor of Amri.
How could Asa do that?
What's that?
Why would Asa do that?
How could Asa do that? So the truth is, Asa is faulted to A, he's faulted to that. B, this really very much did start the decline in Malchus Yehuda also. We'll see. We'll not get to that. There was always this theoretical desire to reconcile. And on the contrary, we saw earlier that the outright Rishayim of the kings of Israel, Asa was busy fighting them. Right, Basha, Asa was hostile to him the whole time, and he initiated offensive against him. We may allow ourselves to say that this was happening yet in the preamble to Amri's reign. Amri had not really set up on the throne yet, right? And Asa saw in him the possible reformation of the Malchus Israel, and therefore he went ahead and did this. Of us, he still faulted because wait and see. There isn't a very good track record here. But Amri did not yet, soon he will, but he did not, he hadn't yet really showed his colors.
And he didn't have to give you a shot, but he probably had other kids also. You know, like the next team, you know, they do.
Right, right. So again, it seems that there was this only this attempt of, if possible, let's reconcile and try to be mashpia. And there's always the sakana of, if you're trying to be mashpia, you might end up being mushpa. And that, unfortunately, usually it goes in the negative direction. So that's why hashpa has to be done with a lot of discretion, prudence. So now, in the 31st year of Asa, the king of Yehuda, right? Are you saying Asa is watching a lot of scenery changing? Malach Omri al Yisrael 12 shana. Omri ruled over Yisrael for 12 years. Tirtza Malach Sheishan. The first 6 years of his reign were in Tirtza. Tirtza was already the capital of the whole bunch of dynasties that were already before him. Zimri, and then before in Baasha's house, and then before in Yerubim's house. This was the capital of Malchus Yisrael before him. Vayikan, now it seems there are indications that Taka, Amri began his reign with a certain level of sincerity. As we'll see also coming along. First of all, we see it indicated in the fact that Asa did like him enough, even though, remember, we have to remember that the Mepharshim say that the pasuk stressed that even though Asa should have been a natural ally of Baasha, who wiped out Yerovam's family, Asa immediately started fighting him when he saw that Baasha was still going to be more of the same. So apparently, the indication number one that we have of Asa's of Omri's initial well wishes and demonstrations of good wishes was the fact that Asa had a whole different approach toward him, wanted to make him a mechut. Number two is the following. Vayikar es ha'har shemroin me'ez shemer v'kikrayim kosev. He purchased Mount Shemroin from a man named Shemer, as we'll see soon. That's why it was called Shemroin, after this Shemer person, for 2 kikars of kesev. Vayiven es ha'har, he built it up into a new capital. In other words, he built it into a metropolis, right? He built it into a great city. Vayikra Eshema Ir Ashabana, and he named this little city that he had built Al Shem Shemer Adonai Har Shemer, after this Shemer person who had been the owner of this mountain. So Chazal make a big deal about this. Omri, as we're going to see soon, is not going to be any better than the people before him. Of course, his son is going to be an even more famous name, Achav, right? We're all familiar with the name, followed by his son. But there was a chiddush here. Up till now, Malchus Yisrael were never able to maintain more than 2 generations. Omri broke the record. He had 3 generations. Chazal note this is something that requires explanation. Why was he Zaycha? And they say it was because he built up as Eretz Yisrael in this sense. He added another metropolis for Eretz Yisrael. That was considered a great tzvus for him. And therefore he merited another generation of rule. So there's a couple of things to note from that. There's a couple of important things to note from this between the lines. Subtleties, right? This is one of those little subtleties you have to pick up on in order to get a picture of what's going on here. Simply understood, the way we were seeing it earlier was basically that Hashem had written off Malchus Yisrael, and as far as he was concerned, Malchus Yehuda was his focus now. Yet, note the fact, why would we even call this adding a city to Eretz Yisrael? These people are broken off, right? It's like the saying, what happens if Abu Mazen goes now and builds up a whole new beautiful neighborhood in Gaza? Well, we give him a big Yashar Koyach, right, and try to get donations for it. So, what's the Mila of building up Shemroin in Malchus Yisrael? Apparently, after all said and done, this still was Eretz Yisrael. And the people of Malchus Yisrael still were Jews, not just in the biological sense, but essential. He said they were Jews, living as Jews, as bad as they were. We don't understand it, because once you're Eved Avodah Zarah, isn't that like, that's it, you're like the cults in India. No, it's not so. We'll see soon, we'll see later. We'll just mention it now already. Achav, the infamous Achav, right? The worst of the worst. Achav is the worst of the worst. Presumably, at least in Malka Yisrael. Might have been a one worse one in Malka Yehuda. But what did Chazal tell us about him? Chazal tell us about him that when he was threatened by a very powerful enemy and he was ready to surrender, and he said, the enemy said, you have to give me all your wives and your sons and your treasure houses. Fine, 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 fine. And then the enemy came back, as we'll see in detail later, and he said, you also have to give me all this different Torah. All of a sudden, Achav turns into a different person. And the Achav was with his bowed head, cowering and saying, I'll give you whatever you want, just leave me, leave me. All of a sudden, his tone changes and he says, now, let's do battle. And he fights them all fiercely. This is the Achav, who is the worst of the worst. Right? So, it's not as simple as that. The Gemara used to point out, Elio, Achav's nemesis, right? He's hiding in a cave because Achav wants to kill him. What's he eating in that cave? What's he eating?
Meat.
What's that? Meat. Being delivered from where? Right?
The palace. Yeah.
Achav's kitchen. Apparently, the kasher standard in Achav's kitchen was something Elio ate. Right? It was Eda. Right? Presumably, Elio only ate Eda. So, this is something to realize. This all of the deterioration that we're seeing is relative. It's still relative. These are still people living as Jews. How can they be living as Jews? They did have a desire. They might have looked at us and said, "How can they be living as Jews and say speak Lashon Hara?" Right? Yeah, by desire. You know, you're not supposed to talk Lashon Hara, but it's not a spirit of being throwing. You can talk Lashon Hara. Avodah Zarah, you know, normal people do Avodah Zarah. There are some tzaddikim who mamish don't do Avodah Zarah at all. Normal people do a shtickl Avodah Zarah. They also worship Hashem. But to dabble in Avodah Zarah, most normal people do it. And, okay, you want to be a tzaddik, be a tzaddik. This wasn't what we're seeing, the reality in Malchus Yisrael, and also in Malchus Yehuda to an extent. Okay. So that's number one. Yes, Omri, by building a new metropolis in Malchus Yisrael, is credited and given an extra generation of rule. This earned him favor with Hashem, and he added a city, a great city, to Malchus Yisrael. Rav Moshe David Vali gives even an added kenach to this, and he says that this was a divinely inspired attempt at Shinui Makom. Let's start a new page in Malchus Yisrael. They had two tzatzos serving as the capital since the days of Yerovam. Let's try something new. A new place, maybe we'll get ourselves into a new mahalach. But the ma'isa didn't last very long. What ends up? Vayase Omri hara b'einei Hashem. Omri did what was bad in the eyes of Hashem. Vayora mikol ha'shalafon. He did worse than everybody who was before him. What does this mean? Worse than everybody that preceded him. So Ralbag says, the Mepharshim simply understood to say that he already started introducing new Avodah Zarah. Up till now, it was by and large just the Agolim of Yerovam, which, as we kept seeing, was not real Avodah Zarah. Right? It was serving Hashem in the wrong way. Serving Hashem in a way that earns you the death penalty. But in terms of Avodah Zarah, classic Avodah Zarah, it's not what it was. It was like the eagle in the Midbar. Okay? Like the eagle in the Midbar, which was an illegal way of serving Hashem. Capitally illegal way of serving Hashem. But apparently already in Omri's days, the first sprouts of real Avodah Zarah were being introduced. But the Ralbag says that it's also possible that it simply means something else. He continued, well, we only see explicitly that Achav really imported good, true Avodah Zarah, right? It's possible, he says, that Omri didn't actually do that, but the fact that he simply followed Yerovam's path was considered a greater crime for him than for all of his predecessors, because Yerovam didn't. The fact that he had already seen two households wiped out because of it, and yet he didn't change his ways, if at this point you're still continuing just the same old, that same old is considered that much worse. Because the fact that you resisted and didn't change your way after seeing all that is that much worse. Which, by the way, is what the Mephoshim say. The Mephoshim say that it says that the Beinoni on Rosh Hashanah, right, the Tzaddikim are written for life, the Rosh Hashanah are written for death, the Beinonim, so-sos, are left hanging. They do tshuva, they are written for life. It's not the written for death. So the question is, why do you have to do tshuva? Tshuva is hard. You start with tshuva, give a shekel to the stalker. They tip the scales. Beinonim, right? You're half-half. Right? So you're half-half, give a shekel to the stalker, you tip the scales. Why do you have to do tshuva? It's complicated. So what the Mephoshim say is, we didn't talk about this. The Mephoshim said this in the Joshua here. You came over to me with the time we talked about this a couple of years ago. But not going with the Pachadis, because he says the Beinoni doesn't mean that, right? He told me that. I never actually saw it inside. But the Mephoshim say, yes, we're talking about a person who's half-half. But the thing is like this. After Rosh Hashanah, you're going through Rosh Hashanah. You're going through the effect of Yom HaDin. You're going through the Aseres Yemei Teshuva. If you did not turn into a tzaddik, that tips the scales and turns you. That renders you a Russian. A person who can go through the Yom HaDin, go through the Aseres Yemei Teshuva with everything that it entails, and stay the same Beinoni, that already turns you into a Russian. So this is basically what we're saying about Omri. Yerovam did what he did, got wiped out, got what he deserved. Basha did what he did, got what he deserved. But Omri is called worse than all of them. Why? Because he did it after seeing what happened to them. So now, Vayelech, Bechol Derech Yerovam ben Nevat, he followed all the ways of Yerovam ben Nevat, Ubechatosa Shehechti es Yisrael, Lahachis es Hashem Elikei Yisrael Behavleh. All of the sins that he had done to cause the Jewish people to sin. The Yasad Ibrahim Amri Asha Asa, all the other affairs of Amri, Murosa Asha Asa, and his night, Halim Subim Al Sefer, Dibrayam and Malchay Yisrael. They are recorded once again in the Chronicles of Malchay Yisrael. By Yishkab Amri Mavoisav, and he died, joined his forefathers. And Kamel Bishaymoin, who was buried in Shaymoin. Okay, now we're moving into the period of Achav. Infamous Achav. The Achav ben Omri Molach al Yisrael b'shnas shloshim u'shmoyne shana. Once again, we've been through about four kings now. He took the reign in year number 38 of Asa Melech Yehuda. The same Asa, right? And Achav ben Omri ruled over Yisrael in Shomrein as Sivishtaim Shom for 22 years. Vayaz Achav ben Omri hara be'enei Hashem. Achav ben Omri did bad in the eyes of Hashem. Mikol Hashem lefonam. He outdid everybody before him. Vayihi anotel lechtoi v'chatoi Yerovam ben Nevat. For him, the sins of Yerovam ben Nevat was already small stuff. He wasn't just going to stick with that. He was going to move on to new levels. Vayikach isha es Izebel bas Esbal melech Sidon. He took as a wife Izebel, daughter of Esbal melech Sidon. Some of us suggest that bas Esbal is not actually the daughter of her father's name. Esbal is not the name of her father, but rather she was the daughter of dedication to Baal, as a Sisun, Es Baal. And she was, like we call it, Ben Blial, right? A person who is an evildoer. We call him a son of evil, right? But she was a daughter of dedication to Baal. Very much not. She was a Tzidkani princess. And he went and he worshipped the Baal. Here we're being introduced to what we know becomes a phenomenon in the Jewish people, the Baal. Unfortunately, by Shtachul, Alvin says.
Is there a Baal before this?
What's that? Was there small appearances? It could be that there were small appearances, but not in the way it's introduced to. Vayokem Mizbeach LaBaal Beis HaBaal Ashavon HaMishonim. And he built a special Mizbeach and a special temple of Baal that he had in Shonim. Vayas Achav Es HaAsherah, also made an Asherah. Vayosef Achav LaAsois LaHachis Es Hashem Aleitei Yisrael Mikol Malchei Yisrael Asheru LeFanim. He went and outdid, in terms of angering Hashem, all the kings of Israel that were before him. The Malvin says that Asherah we did already see. We saw not only here, we also saw it in the wives of Shlomo. Avodah Zarah is over the top, right? Avodah Zarah is a cardinal sin, no matter how his wife is. But even among Avodah Zarah, there's Avodah Zarah and there's Avodah Zarah. If you will, Malvin says, Asherah was a bit of a more mild Avodah Zarah. Because Baal was one of the most abominable forms of Avodah Zarah. It involved sacrificing a person's children to it, etc. This was an Avodah Zarah that involved everything evil. It was one of the worst forms of Avodah Zarah that were out there. And this is what Achav now introduced to the Jewish people. Okay, we'll stop here because the next pasuk is almost a parsha in itself. Where is Stephen? They have to ask for Jonathan.
Up north, the Lebanese border.
I mean, further north on the Lebanese coast. Sorry.